when Luke came back and he says, there's nothing for me here now. I want to be a Jedi like my father. And I just remember how that felt.
Yes.
And it felt, I could feel the destiny in my chest.
When you're literally 8 years old, that kind of thing just gets locked into your head.
All of us who are old enough to remember this, that first movie was absolutely seismic.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Is it really that far? Is it really?
No, because it's right here in my heart.
Oh.
No, wait. Sorry, that's blockage. All right, bye.
We are very prejudiced saps, as far as saps go. But sometimes we still need help. Sometimes we need friends and allies to come by and say, shut up, you two. And that's why we have our good friend Jerry Chrisman here today. There's Jer, everybody.
Hello.
Hey. We want to talk about Star Wars, and I like that you've redone your background there, Chad, for more of your Star Wars stuff. That's good. Your nerddom established. But
but that's good.
The thing is, when it comes to this, it's a big topic, and it goes deep to our hearts.
Huge.
Yeah, that's why we have Jerry there, not just because we like talking to Jerry and he's a friend of ours, but Jerry is one of the he's not as a comic booky guy as myself or you, Chad, but when it comes to Star Wars, the man is rabid. And I mean that in a good way, not the call animal control way. So
you can if you want, you know.
I wouldn't mind calling animal control on Jerry like every now and then. So we wanted to have him on to talk about the big topic. I will say this, when Star Wars premiered in 1977.
Star Wars, a billion years in the making.
None of us knew each other yet. So we all have our individual intro to the saga. Yeah. So like we did with the Beatles, Chad, which was we just talked about what the Beatles means to us and all of that.
Well, this is unique. And unlike the Beatles, we were actually around when Star Wars began. As our friend, our mutual friend Paul said before, the Star Wars was kind of like the Beatles for our generation. Because it was such a,
well, I
such
mean,
a huge event.
It was something, anything that gets shared across entire generation and shared in regardless of your social or economic standing, it just infiltrated everything for our generation because we were the right age. I'm going to say, you know, sure, my brother's older and I'm sure it meant a lot to him too, but there's something about when you're literally 8 years old, that kind of thing just gets locked into your head and it becomes part of your life. So Star Wars right off the bat was a big deal.
It's not science fiction so much as it is space fantasy, and it's about people. So the energy of the movie goes towards exploring these human relationships, and I think that's what makes it so accessible to people.
So, Jerry, our guest, did you see it when it first opened?
Yeah, it was like, I was just sitting there thinking, like, as you guys know, back then, you know, there weren't big releases, typically. A lot of movies would start New York, LA, and then if it did okay, it would start radiating out. So I'd been hearing kind of about it, even as a kid. My parents had been hearing about it for a while. And then and then it blew up, and that's when we went to go see it.
Yeah. Where were you in Bel Air? Were you in Houston?
No, I had moved out of Bel Air. No, I was in Houston. I was, I think it was third grade. And I remember my mom, I mean, I only knew a little bit about it, but my mom said, well, we're going to go see this movie, and it's called Star Wars. I'm like, okay, cool. So we went down there at the Galleria, which people from the Houston area know what that is.
Yes.
Huge shopping mall. So we went there. It was like a 7 o'clock showing, and it was lines around. I mean, it was sold out. We couldn't get in. I was disappointed. Oh. To my mom's credit, she's like, we're seeing this movie today. So because my bedtime was like 8:30 or 9. So we went to like the 9:30 show. And in between, we went to Nymphas. I'll never forget.
Oh.
Nymphas is a famous chain of Tex-Mex in Houston. And and then we saw the movie. And from the opening shot, like millions of other, you know, kids our age, my head blew apart. It was just the mouth dropped when, you know, just the opening crawl to the ship appearing, and then I'll never forget when Vader entered.
Oh.
And I was just like, oh, man.
So he showed up at your screening? He was there?
He did. He did. He was pretty polite. He had trouble with the popcorn, though, you know?
Very, very jealous. Chad, same thing? Houston, obviously.
Yeah, ish. Yeah. My parents and I were living out in Stafford.
Washington,
the Meadows at the time, which is where our friends at Washburn also
We know
grew
the
up.
Meadows well. Yeah.
We know the Meadows.
And I had heard about it, obviously. We went to go see it kind of late. I guess it came out in May of that year.
It did. Yeah.
We probably didn't go see it until like a couple months. It wasn't that long, much long, but it just seemed like forever at the time because my parents were trying to talk me into going to see it.
Really?
And for some reason, I was like 7 years old at the time, and I was a little apprehensive about seeing the movie because I was like, I don't know. It seems kind of scary. And I think I'm trying to piece together why I do remember one incident where my mom showed me an article about it in Time Magazine, I think. And there was a picture of Chewbacca roaring.
There you go.
Like, you know, that the promo shot that you see all the time. But anyway, so I was like, I don't know. And I don't remember this specifically, but I do remember my friends in school talking about it a lot. And it's quite possible one of them had said, "Yeah, man, this guy gets his arm cut off, you know, and there's like blood all over the floor. It's fucking awesome." So I just think maybe that was in my head as well. I'm like, I don't want to see the scary movie, mommy. Don't mean take me there. But I finally got talked into it because my dad especially really wanted to go see it. He was always a huge sci-fi fan.
Yeah.
And so we finally went. We went to the Westwood Mall.
Westwood.
Oh, my gosh. Westwood, yeah.
Which was a General Cinema, as I recall. And we were sitting at a packed house, you know. Of course, I'm sure every showing of Star Wars was back then. And my dad, I think, was more excited than any of us. He's just like, and I remember him overhearing a conversation behind us of somebody saying, "Oh, this is my third time seeing it," or fourth time. And,
cool.
Dad kind of went, "That guy just said he's seeing it for the third." And that was back then. That was really unusual that somebody would go see a movie more than, you know, maybe twice, you know, it just wasn't a thing, you know? So that sort of piqued our excitement even more. But I realized as soon as it started that my fears were completely unfounded. And I was absolutely entranced. And I went home that night because I was really into doing these picture stories at the time, sort of like comics, where they were like one panel comics. I'd take a legal pad and draw a panel, do the next page, do the next one. And
you so started drawing Star Wars?
I drew my own revision, like a paraphrase of the saga called Moon Wars.
Yep, there you
where
go.
Instead of Luke Skywalker, it was Luke Mousewalker, and it was Darth Rabbit instead of Darth Vader. His ears kept popping out of his helmet.
Little animal theme.
All my stories
essentially
are like
you are doing what Zack Snyder has done with Rebel Moon. Anyway, so
way too much exposition.
Podcast. That's another podcast.
As far as myself, I don't remember when, and I'm foggy on where.
Well, good night, everybody.
Well, no, the thing for me is I remember the watching of it, but going in, I just remember the line, and I remember we were next to the poster for a long time waiting to go in. And so the first thing, again, I'm Mr. Comic Kid, I'm just looking at the art before we even go in, and I'm like, I can't even imagine what this is going to be. Look at this guy has a light sword. Look at that helmet on that guy. This is so cool. So I was totally pumped. And then I go in and the movie meets all those expectations, and it's nothing I've seen before. You know, at that point, what did we have as sci-fi? We had reruns of Star Trek.
Space 1999.
Had that even kicked off? Because I think that was...
Yeah, 75.
75, okay. So, I mean...
Wow.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, we didn't have a lot, and certainly nothing that rollicked, because Space 1999 is so boring. I mean...
It really is.
As a kid, I gave it a shot, you know, but it was a bunch of middle-aged people in ill-fitting outfits, and they were just walking around the set going like, uh-oh, we've lost a seal on the moon base. Man, I
remember that episode.
Yeah. Like, uh-oh. Oh, we have no breathable air.
Every line started with "uh-oh."
Yeah, that was the
"uh-oh." That's an alien chick that we brought in because our ratings are failing. Uh-oh, she can turn into a panther. Anyway, I wasn't a fan, even though I did still to this day think the ship was cool. You're right, Jerry. You're absolutely right, because I'm remembering now. I've got the making of, like, that big day-by-day book about the making of the first film. And the Millennium Falcon was almost based on ship from Space Nint 1999.
Not this ship, sister.
Ooh, I'm so glad they went back for another take on it.
What a piece of junk.
So, yes, it blew my mind. I'm sure Robin was the same way. You know, Robin, I try to edit out of most of my memories, but it's quite possible that
love you, Robin. Love you.
Yeah, of course. We may have played Star Wars stuff like the next day, and that kind of it became that Halloween. I was Luke Skywalker. You know, that was the only year I wasn't Dracula.
to both your points, like, Chad, you went home and drew things, and, you know, Brendan, you guys started playing Star Wars. Before Star Wars, I'd seen it. I was obsessed with Legos, and I had literally thousands of Legos. But I was really into World War II, so I'd build all these fighters out of Legos, you know, airplanes. And I went home that night, and I converted them all to spaceships. Legos. Yeah,
of course.
And I stayed up so late, and then my mom was so cool. She let me stay home the next day. It was a school night, and she let me stay home.
Wow.
So cool.
We obviously will talk about action figures and toys and the delay about getting that cool stuff.
These action figures are not yet available, but this Star Wars Early Bird certificate package is in store.
But I will say, I never had Legos. This is my sad, poor boy childhood. No, it's okay. My friends did, but my parents had given us Lincoln Logs because I guess wood was cheaper. But so I made X-Wings out of Lincoln Logs, and they were very rustic. That was a DIY Homer Formby kind of like a project, where the rebels going like, "We got some wood."
I think all the kids our age, we just used whatever we had, you know.
Used whatever you had, and it was just imagination. It was just anything that was vaguely spaceship shaped that was the thing. And once the toys did start showing up, I had an endless thirst for every single toy. Star Wars was the best comic book movie of my childhood until Superman the movie, because basically that's neck and neck. But what a year. And it gave me all the same thrills, I would assume, that Spielberg and Lucas as kids had watching the Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers serials and that sort of thing. So we had new heroes, we had new villains, and they were just in our imaginations. I probably came up with my own, like, fan stories. I probably came up with takes where it was, I don't remember any of it. I remember drawing, just like you, Chad. I was doing my best to draw Darth Vader all the time. Yeah. He's got a great, fairly easy design, because looking at him right there behind you, it's like, yeah, if you can master that helmet shape, you're pretty much good. so it was all I wanted to think about, and the mysteries that it set up, because one thing that was great about Lucas, not a great writer, but since he knew he had to take that huge original story he had and, you know, shave it down into like an 80-minute movie or whatever, he left stuff in that he wasn't going to be able to answer. But that is genius, because what it does is it fills out in your imagination. This is a much bigger story.
Yeah.
You know, when he's talking about Clone Wars, what the fuck is that? I don't know what that means.
You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father.
It's like, your father was the greatest pilot I ever flew with. And I'm like, the old dude flew? When was this? It was during a war? All that kind of stuff. You sit there going like, I need to know more what this is.
Before the dark times. Before the Empire.
It's like, this is an old religion. Oh, the Jedi. They're all crazy and nuts.
That wizard's just a crazy old man.
It's like, Are they? Because they seem pretty badass to me.
It's all a lot of simple tricks and nonsense.
And even Darth Vader being such a badass, having to deal with like corporate empire shit where they're like going, you and your sorcerer's ways, where they're like mocking him. And I go, he's the baddest motherfucker around. And they're being totally disrespectful. They are sassing Darth Vader.
Your sad devotion to that ancient religion has not helped you conjure up the stolen data tapes.
But it's all of that because you sit there going, an even more tight script would have gotten rid of a lot of that, and it would have just been very basic. Like, we have to get this thing, we have to blow up that thing, done. Instead, what he did was he gave us as if we had just been dropped into that universe. It's like he gave us hints.
Yeah.
Of course, if there had never been any other sequels, there still would have been fan fiction. There would have been novels. People would have been going, hey, yeah. I remember when they dropped that thing about Clone Wars. I came up with an idea for that.
That's a thing that we are, you know, all of us who are old enough to remember this, that first movie was absolutely seismic the effect that it had in all of our lives. And yeah, if there had been no other movies, we still be talking about it.
It was both very basic, pure Joseph Campbell myth. I mean, it was exactly a fairy tale story, but it was also detailed and intricate enough to basically incite everybody to need to know more, to want to see another adventure there. Plus the casting and all that. I wanted to see those people again. I wanted to hang out with Leia and Han and Chewie. Man, Han and Chewie, come on. What kid isn't going to sit there going, I want a Wookiee pal?
Well, you said it, Chewie.
By the way, make that the name of this episode. I want a Wookiee pal.
Come here, you big coward. Chewie, come here.
And some of the first tie-in merchandise I ever got, as I told you, Chewbacca socks.
Yes.
I had Chewbacca. Yes.
Chewbacca. What were they, furry? Were they?
No. They were like normal athletic tube socks, but they had like an iron on, weirdly, on the sock of Chewbacca's face with like the logo and that kind of thing. And I was like, yeah. And
wasn't that cool? It was so great, wasn't it?
It was on everything. I mean, and I had Star Wars t-shirts. I had the lunchbox. I mean, even before the action figures came out, I was, you know, oh, I found it in that Sears catalog. I'm embarrassed to say that. No, I'm just embarrassed that I am so nostalgic that Chad knows this because we've talked about it. I found a site that had scans of old Christmas Sears and JCPenney catalogs. Mm-hmm. And I went nuts going through all my childhood and going, oh my God, I had that and I wanted this and da da da. I had the Sears Star Wars bed sheets set. Bed sheets, pillowcases, and curtains. And
I thought you were going to say underoos. So
I never did because you guys might be able to remember this. Chad, you're a year younger. You probably were the age for underoos for the last gasp. By the time underoos
younger,
came out, you are.
What?
Yeah.
We were born in 69.
Oh.
Okay. We're all the same. We're the same age, Brent.
Brent and I have this conversation all the time. We're not quite sure how old we are. So.
Oh, that's right. Well, it's also tricky because Jerry was born in 68, though.
Oh, okay. But yeah, you're like 3 months older than me.
Well, then you share my pain. We were too old for underoos. By the time underoos came out, we were too big by that point.
Yeah.
So I was really? I never had underoos.
Is Sad. One ever too old for underoos?
Well, I mean, if they made them in my size, I would be
running around. Don't be so ridiculous, R2. Underoos are for earthlings.
So, yes, it was everywhere in my house. I'm sure my parents were sick of it. And we had plenty of action figures down the line to continue the adventures until the sequel came out.
Did y'all have the soundtrack?
Yes.
I have a funny story about that one. Because, of course, once I saw the movie, every week I was begging to go see it again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most time we wouldn't go, but you know, I'd call them into going. And I remember I was with my dad this time, and we were waiting in line, and there was a record store right by the theater. And I went in there, and I saw Star Wars soundtrack, and it was like $1.99. I was like, "Well, Dad will go for that." So I asked him, and he got it. And then when I got it home, I started listening to it, and I'm like, "This doesn't sound right." And I looked at it, read it's like. in small letters it said not the original soundtrack.
Oh my God.
What?
And it was
someone had just done their own.
It was the Electric Moog or Moog Orchestra.
Oh.
So it was a synthesizer version of it. And it was okay, but I was terribly disappointed.
Yeah. I just realized this is right down here. I didn't actually fish this out before, but I have the original LP.
Ooh, look at that. I had it back in the day. Man, yes.
Wow.
I had that, and I had the Story of Star Wars album, which I listened to more. Because even though the music is amazing, I've never been a score guy, because score is, it's music. There's no lyrics. There's no story. It's just music. So I am that weird, like even movies I love, it's like I would rather, if you had just a recording of the entire soundtrack with dialogue, I would listen to that.
Well, we talked about that.
The Story of Star Wars was.
Right. Yeah. We talked about that in one of our earliest episodes.
I loved that. I still wore have that thing too. Out.
Yeah.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
Just, I could have the movie in my head. It was them saying the exact same lines. I'm like, I love this! You're my only
hope. What's this?
A three-dimensional likeness of Princess Leia appears in midair, projected by R2-D2.
I think part of the, you know, Brendan, you had mentioned Joseph Campbell, and I remember the first time watching the movie, I'm sitting there, I didn't know what Hero's Journey was. I didn't know Joseph Campbell. I didn't know any of that. However, I still felt it. And when he met Obi-Wan, which I was in awe of when he met this guy. And then, but when Luke came back and he says, there's nothing for me here now. I want to be a Jedi like my father. And I just remember how that felt.
There's nothing for me here now. I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father.
Yes.
And it felt, I could feel the destiny in my chest. And
yes.
Feeling the zeitgeist of the hero's journey, even though I didn't know what it was.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you did. Because the hero's journey isn't Joseph Campbell. It's Joseph Campbell calling attention to it. It's a thread that you had already, at that age, read and heard fairy tales and so forth. And so we already knew these kinds of stories, just not with laser swords. Just not with
I didn't know consciously know what consciously it meant. Yeah,
exactly.
So that's the power of it, that it just radiated out to our generation.
It's a stupid kid in England pulling a sword out of a stone. I mean, it's just all that stuff where you go, there's that kind of that, as you said, a sense of destiny, and I have something I must accomplish, and I don't know if I'm up to the task, but I have to do it anyway, that kind of thing. That goes straight to anyone who grows up with heroic literature or stuff. So, yes, my mom always craps on comics, and I'm going, but comics are the same thing. It's like sense of ambition or a lot of it, I could literally just go back and tie into old issues of Superman or whatever, and just go, it's the same thing. It's like, it is right and good.
And plus, we all want to fly. I mean, come on. We all want to be able to fly.
Actually, I'm not so much the flying guy.
Really? No. You want the stretchy arms? That's what you want.
No, I don't.
He wants to be a bear.
Yes. I wanted to be a bear man or be able to shoot lightning. And boy, was I sad that only the Sith. Yes, you're right. Not at the same time, because that would just be dumb. When it turned out that Sith could actually do lightning hands, I was like, oh, don't make me a Sith. Come on.
Come on. Get out of here.
But anyway, so all of it is just, it's crack for the imagination. And I will say another great thing about it. You look at it, even now they've cleaned it up so many times, it's still shot on film in the 70s. So even the remasterings, the prequels and the sequels do their best, but there's a lived in quality. We're doing it on the cheap, but it looks real because everything looks like it's beaten up and weather beaten and all that sort of, and you sit there going, yeah. So you really are put in a different place. It's not as clean as a lot of fantasy stuff. That was another big thing, was just how the ILM guys, when they're doing their original effects and so forth, Lucas was like, I want everything to look like it's an old car that's barely on its last legs, but can still do it when you need to. So like the Millennium Falcon being scorched and oil streaks on the X-Wings. And it's just like, I love everything about it, because there is, that makes it a real place. And it's cheesy. You go into the Mos Eisley Cantina and you can tell it's like, just pull every, you know, Halloween mask out of the room and put it on people. But all in one place, just this idea of a meeting place between all these alien species. And there's a blonde haired California kid coming in, just like going like, oh, geez, this is pretty cool. Oh, you droids have to stay outside.
We don't serve their kind here.
What?
Poor droids. Even as a kid, I was like, why?
Yeah,
but droids, are they the troublemakers? Right. We don't deal with droids here. I'm like, but they would be the calmest people in the entire place.
And what are they going to drink? You know, yeah. What are the droids going to drink?
Well, thank God they told us about that in.
Here, droids are served Nepenthe.
What's Nepenthe?
Well, that was another example of this just unprecedented world building that was going on in that one movie. Because this idea of just showing you the trappings of the place and creating intrigue without kind of driving you mad with unanswered questions too. It's like, oh, wow, this is fascinating. You're in the world and oh no, droids, no, outside.
Yeah.
So why don't you wait out by the speeder? We don't want any trouble.
I heartily agree with you, sir.
Plus, John Williams deserves crazy amounts of respect and so forth. And he needs it. He's been overlooked. It's a joke. But I mean, you know, that Cantina band, they fucking rock, man.
Yes. Another amazing job by John Williams there, where
everything,
and we can talk about some of the things may not have landed so well later.
Like what? Okay, yeah. Yeah. Yub nub. Yeah.
All right, I got a question for you guys. Did you guys have any bad experiences around Star Wars? I did, and I'll explain why. Do you remember a network TV?
The Star Wars Holiday Special.
No, not the Holiday Special, but on network TV, it was the making of Star Wars. And I just couldn't wait.
You know perfectly well where it began. It began with Mr. Lucas.
So I'm sitting there watching. I'm like 10 minutes in, and my older brother, about 8 years older than me, and he was straight out of the cast of Dazed and Confused. And he walks in, he's like, Jerry, come here. I'm like, no, come here. He made me help him install speakers into his Monte Carlo. And cool. It took all of the making of, and I only saw the last 5 minutes.
Where will it all end? Perhaps R2, it will never end.
And back then, as people know, it's like, there was no VHS.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to air again. I was just crushed. To this day, I'm not over it. It's like, I didn't get to see it.
Yeah.
But you did eventually get to see it.
Right. You know, oddly enough, they showed it in high school on one day when the teacher didn't feel like teaching. So that's
nice.
When I saw it.
Nice.
So I didn't
get
to
see
it, but you know, but I was so crushed, and it was to install speakers.
Eventually there have been 85 million behind the scenes things, but I can understand that thrill. If they showed up in anything like a commercial tie-in to Burger King glasses or something, it was just like, Darth Vader wants me to go to Burger King and get those glasses. And I was like, I gotta get them.
We can get all four.
So, and they were commercialized out the waz, but at the same time, you know, and the cartoons, droids. I mean, this is down the line, but you had your Ewok cartoon and the droids cartoon, and just, I wasn't a huge fan of those. I was too cool by then, but I was, you know, the movies themselves were still the thing I was totally focused on. But I never felt like they ever went away, because they were being, you know, thrown at us every single, and of course it was the first VHS I ever bought, Star Wars.
Yeah.
When we actually had our own VCR. And I was like, and I remember that was a big deal. We've got a VCR now. What's our first movie going to be? It will be Star Wars. Pardon me, parents. It will be Star Wars.
Pardon me, parent.
And knowing my family, it was probably like Star Wars and then Robert Preston and the Music Man. I think it's probably like, pardon me. Or my mom's like, I want Lawrence of Arabia or Ivanhoe or something. But I'm like, it will be Star Wars. Thank you.
Ivanhoe?
So do you remember going back to see, because this is one of my favorite memories, in between the original movie and Empire, and for a while between Empire and Return of the Jedi too, they kept bringing out A New Hope, as it was later branded.
Yeah.
Every summer it would run in theaters again.
Yep.
Star Wars, coming back to your galaxy for 2 weeks only.
My dad and I would go see it again and again and again and again.
I honestly don't know how many times I saw it in the theater. I'm pretty sure I saw it every time it was re-released at least once. The first release, I mean, that first year, I think my parents were pretty okay with us going back and back and back. Probably saw it 4 or 5 times the first year, and that's rare for us. That's rare for, you know, my childhood. There weren't too many movies I did that with or could, but I think my parents are like, Star Wars, fine, go. Yeah, fine. So I think, and every time it was re-released, I went back and saw it. One of my saddest movie-going stories I will share with you now. What was the year of the remastered release?
The special editions? The
special editions.
It was 1997, yeah.
For an entire generation, you've only been able to see it on a TV screen.
Now, Star Wars is back on the big screen.
Yes. All right, so at that point, I'm in San Francisco, and I am so beyond pumped. There's a great theater there I'm gonna go see it at. The line was huge. I took the day off of work. I was in line 5 hours. They sold out 3 people before me.
Oh, that's the worst.
Three, and they're like, sorry, that's it. I was like, for the whole day? Yeah, the entire day is sold out. I was like, oh god. So I went back to work. I went to the Virgin Megastore. They weren't going to like go, fine, clock in 3 hours late. So I didn't go back to work. I just went back to hang out. And they're like, dude, what are you doing here? You were going to, I was like, they sold out, man. They sold out. I was like, you guys doing all right? Cool. I'm just going to go home now. Cool, man.
Well, do you want to know what happens?
You're a dick, Jerry. I did eventually get to see it in the theater. And the parts that I liked, I still like. The parts I didn't like, I'm like, geez, we've talked about that before. It's like, I don't need to see Jabba the Hutt. And I don't need to see Han stepping on his tail. Come on.
Stepping up. The blurred Han.
That was totally. Time well spent.
I was lucky enough. I was living in New York at the time. So when the special editions came out, Ziegfeld used to show, when these big event movies would come out, all the special editions, they would show it almost 24 hours.
But outside the Ziegfeld Theater is the real show, Return of the Dorks.
Because one of the reasons was it was only tickets were available. I would go see it like at 4 a.m. or something like that. And then just stay up all night after that and go to work.
Chat, I got to ask you, were you wearing pants?
I was wearing pants.
Okay.
Oh, thank goodness.
Woo. All I can think is New York cinemas, 4 o'clock in the morning. Not a lot of pants in there. Not a lot of pants.
That's true.
Not a lot of pants.
Chad, there are times where I'm convinced that only you and I are the only people in the world.
People awake in the world, yeah. But I was happy to do that. And those were great experiences. And it was so neat after so long seeing the movies again in a theater with audiences. One of my favorite memories from that first time I went to go see A New Hope at Ziegfeld, the scene when Vader leans, I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Are giving you clairvoyance enough to find the rebels' hidden fort?
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
And the guy in front of me goes, oh, shit. And I was like, it was great to have that experience as an adult, you know, with other adults who grew up with the movie as I did, you know, because that's not something anybody would have said when I was in high school.
Probably not. Younger. No.
Oh, shit. Like, this is great.
Well, the thing I love is that and it has a lot to do with the age you first see something, that even if you've seen it 12,000 million times, it can still, like, moments will still have that effect.
Yeah.
Where you sit there going, like, that still gets me, or this still gets me. So I can almost quote it from end to end, and yet I can still like go, oh, or yeah, all the little stuff. It's just amazing that, and if there are movies I see now that I'm amazed by that are great films, that the second viewing, I'm then taking it apart and going like, oh yeah, no, I still like it, but no, that thing is, it's because of the age. It is part of us to the point where I'm still worried about, Aunt Beru. Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. It's like, oh no. Oh no.
They got a raw deal.
They got one. Not raw. Well done. They got a well done deal.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
No, I know what you mean, Brenda. Like, there's still parts of A New Hope that still just resonate. And my absolute favorite part is there's a moment where it's the last run in the trench.
Mm-hmm.
And it, all of a sudden, someone, I can't remember who dies, and it's just Luke. Yeah. And there's a shot of him where he realizes it.
Yeah.
And that's when he decides to trust the Force. It is so powerful, that moment.
Yep.
Use the Force, Luke.
You got to trust your feelings, dear.
Oh, I do.
You got to turn off your targeting computer.
Luke, trust me.
Man.
Every single beat of that scene is just absolutely incredible. Every single beat.
Yeah, and I think originally they weren't going to blow up the planet. That was added. That was kind of I believe a late addition. So it was just they were just attacking the Death Star.
The Death Star has cleared the planet.
And I can't remember again with the idea of making the Rebel base being threatened.
Rebel base in range.
You may fire when ready.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
my understanding.
Yeah.
So that made it even of course that upped the tension. But the other shot too where the. Where the X-Wings go down in the trench.
It's just like Beggar's Canyon back home.
I remember that felt like a roller coaster in the theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
And when we got the not so great vector graphics game, it was still like, this is as close as I'll ever get.
Oh, I love that game.
Yeah, God. That was one of the, if not
because it talked.
First, it was one of the first, it talked, but it was also one of the first cabinet, sit-down games.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was a stand-up version.
That was the one I played was a stand-up, but yeah.
The one I remember was the where you sat down and the speakers were right behind you. Mm-hmm. So when Obi-Wan is telling you to trust your feelings, I'm like, I'm going to do it!
Let go!
I never actually, I didn't do well. I was not a good Luke. Didn't matter how many quarters I put in. I don't think I ever saved the universe. Oh, well.
It's okay.
But thanks, man. Thanks.
Do you remember what it was like seeing the next two movies when we were kids, when Empire came out?
I mean, I loved all three of them. It's just that Empire, that was one of the first also sequels that I myself was familiar with. I mean, maybe people of another generation are still going like, there's a Godfather 2? but for me, it's like, I get more. And, it's the same with Superman 2. I, of course, remember, it's like, I get to return with those characters and see a new story. And Empire is so heavy. And it has some of the best things in the entire trilogy. And some people think it's the best film of the original trilogy. And I can understand people who believe that. I get it.
Spoiler alert, I just couldn't accept that Vader was his father. I just refused to believe it.
It's not true. That's impossible.
It took me a long time to accept
really?
It.
Really? No, I thought it made perfect sense. Even as a kid, I was like going like...
I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to believe it.
Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
Well, this goes into the stuff that we would talk about of those different ages we were. Because I remember when the first movie came out, we had these stupid debates about whether Darth Vader was a robot or not. Like, oh man, he's totally a robot. I'm like, no, he's not. And then after that, I was like, well, surely he's lying about being his dad.
That's that me too. That's what I thought.
That was what went back and forth for 3 years in between.
Wow, I totally bought it. I just thought it was. I thought that was dark, but I was like, oh, no, that makes sense. And I just love the whole, yeah!
Yeah.
Luke, you okay, Brendan? Well, he was having as hard a time as you were believing that, Jerry.
That doesn't make sense. That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. Because
right. They didn't tell him until, like, the last minute, apparently.
Yeah, he was the only one set who knew.
And he handed me the piece of paper that said, I am your father. I was shocked. I said, is that true? He said, well, you search your feelings and we're going to play it like that. So, oh my gosh, Dad Vader.
I think the original line was, this outfit is chafing me. That was the original line.
Obi-Wan killed your father, I think is the line that David Prowse had been told to say.
The way we filmed it, Vader said, you don't know the truth. Obi-Wan killed your father.
Well, it works regardless. It was a gut punch. And
a cliffhanger.
Yeah. The cliffhanger. Han gets frozen in carbonite. And I'm like, what? No.
Yeah. It's like, come
Chewbacca's howl. Man, that's a thing that I felt in the theater. Obviously, I was sad for Leia, but Chewie's like, oh, I'm like, oh. His buddy got frozen. I can't handle that shit. Boba Fett walking off like he comes. He does. He struts. He swaggers when they're pushing the thing, and he's got his gun up. He's kind of like, yeah, I'm getting paid.
Chad, you'll appreciate this. I saw it at the West Alabama Theater. That's where I saw Empire first.
Yeah, that's where I saw it too.
I love that theater. I still miss it to this day.
Now it's a Trader Joe's, so congratulations.
Well, it's kind of like a theater.
I don't remember where I saw it. I have a hard time remembering where I am.
I can't remember my last thought, so it's okay.
I remember where I saw Return of the Jedi, too, several years after that, and that was the Maryland 3.
Oh, Maryland.
And so do you remember being disappointed with Return of the Jedi when it came out? I think Brendan and I, you and I have already talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
But Jerry?
I wasn't disappointed. It wasn't my favorite of the three. I still loved it. I didn't feel disappointed, but I wasn't crazy about the Ewoks. I know I'm alone in that opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Hot take.
Controversy.
I didn't mean to bring that to...
The concepts are all fine. I wish... And I do respect the fact that Lucas still is sitting there in his mind seeing this as the third, just like the first, is aimed at like 10-year-olds. The problem is that the audience grows up even across the time of this trilogy. So he wasn't going to make each movie more mature. They were still being aimed at 10-year-olds. So sadly, by the time the third one rolls around, we're all in junior high and we're like, oh, little teddy bears, man? Really?
Yeah.
Teddy bears?
Yeah.
But still, there's still so much great stuff, even in that third one.
There is.
Mainly the Luke, Darth, Emperor stuff is
great. It's great.
Because that's where a lot of the weight is. And of course, the reunion of Han and Leia. I do love the whole. I still love the whole heist concept of like Lando and Leia have infiltrated Jabba's palace as like mercenaries. We don't know that as the audience. And when she takes the thing off and he's like, someone who loves you. You're like, oh, it's Leia. Are you kidding me? And the fact that it was all like a coordinated thing that Luke showed up and he did the, I'm a badass Jedi now, I'm all in black. And you're like, emo Luke, I'm all here for you. And he's like,
cool part.
Oh, Jabba, that's the last thing you're going to say because I'm going to have to kill you. I'm like, oh!
It's your choice, but I warn you not to underestimate my power.
Yeah, to see Luke being a badass, that was really cool.
It was awesome. So there was still plenty of stuff in there. And I liked the concept of a non-technological society of little things are instrumental in taking down the Empire. That's a great concept.
Yeah. I just wish it could have been Wookiees like he originally wanted.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and Brendan and I, we talked about this in a previous show a while back, that Paul and I our friend Paul, we went to this comic convention in Houston in the Galleria area a few months, like 6 months, I think, before Jedi came out. And they were still, even though it was obviously the movie had already been made at this point, they were still talking about, oh yeah, we're getting to see the Wookiee planet. We're going to, I don't even know if it had a name at that point. They probably pulled up, you know, concept art from the Christmas special or something. I have no idea. But we knew some of the stuff he said was right. But yeah, we said, yeah, we're going to go see the Wookiees and it's going to be really cool. And so when the movie came out, I think we had already heard about what was really in the movie before from like a Starlog magazine or something like that. Like,
Starlog.
So there were several things about the movie that disappointed me at the time as a 13-year-old or however old.
Okay,
sure.
Time, right.
Late on.
So there was the Ewoks obviously was like, what? Mm-hmm. What is this? There was the weird things like Chewbacca doing the Tarzan yell when he's swinging some rope.
Yeah, you know?
It's like, what are we doing now?
Yeah,
and the thing that has grown on me, that you're talking about, the best thing being the Luke Vader Emperor thing. At the when I first saw it, I really could not invest or get myself in this whole idea of Vader suddenly turning good again. I was like, he's being redeemed. Why? So now I'm supposed to feel sympathy for him. He's a good guy now. I didn't like seeing his face. And
well, that was also a disappointing,
you know,
casting idea. No offense to that actor, but it's like you take him off and that's what he looks like under there.
And as much as I love Ian McDiarmid now, I thought that his performance was so ridiculously over the top. And like, I'm evil and I'm going to kill you really slowly. And yeah. But later, when I had time to actually see the movie as I was older and I got to really appreciate the father-son dynamic and stuff, I loved that whole bit now. I just love everything about those scenes with Vader and Luke.
It is too late for me, son.
Agreed.
I appreciate, you know, I don't mind the Ewoks so much anymore. But yeah, those little goofy touches, like the, you know, that's really the thing, is the Tarzan yelp and the things like that. And then, of course, the special edition made it even worse with some of the changes he made.
I know. I felt when he took Vader's mask off and you did see it, and it wasn't menacing at all. So it was weird. It was weird.
He was like Captain Kangaroo under the mask.
It was a bad idea. I think I think that was a choice. The problem is that we've had years to imagine, but I think they wanted it to be someone under there that looked so human that we could accept that as being Anakin Skywalker, being Luke's father. I'm sitting there. And again, for instance, we just on one of the podcasts I do with John and Robin, which is about Vincent Price movies, we just did The Abominable Dr. Fives, which is one of my all time favorites, actually films, not just Vincent Price films. I love that movie. But he's got this, when they pull all his prosthetics off and he's got this like skeletal, I'm like, that's what I kind of wanted, you know, Anakin to look like, because the corruption, the Emperor, we do find out later that physically is like an external, this is what going to the dark side makes you look like. Plus, we do know that Anakin is mostly cyborg and so forth. So having a roly-poly, you know, like white-faced, bald-headed dad figure in there going like, oh, that's better. I'm dying, son. Like, no.
It was really strange at the time, yeah.
It should still be scary, strange. But if you play it right in the eyes, we'll still go, this was your last gasp. You found your way back to the light. That's nice. And then if his Force ghost is like, hi, I'm happy. Great. Fine, even if he doesn't look like Hayden Christensen, I would have been down with that.
I'd always hoped they'd used. I was hoping for Buddy Hackett when they took the mask off.
The show is very nice, guys. Because it was really shapoopy. You're gonna try to get me.
Apparently, in the Star Wars universe, it's real easy to be forgiven too. Like. I murdered a million people, but come back to the light. We're good. All good.
I know. It is a little, I mean, that's a little bit of like Judeo-Christian thing. It's like, no matter how bad, if you are genuine and sincere at the end of your life and you go, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do all that. And I beg your forgiveness. Yeah, you're fine. Apparently you get to hang out with Obi-Wan and Yoda forever.
I did like later in the Star Wars Disney television series, you know, where, sometimes a line would throw in about like, oh, Alderaan, you murdered, you know, my entire family with Alderaan blowing up. I love those callbacks.
Well, anytime that the nice thing about having other material, as in TV shows, the cartoons and so forth, is that they're little, those are chances to fill in some of that. And to remind people of the weight of that, because even in a cartoon series, they can sit there going like, do you understand that what he did was this horrible thing and how many people paid for this? And you're like, yeah, no, that's awesome. Because you should never just go, cool villain, man, with that cool sword. That's all. And one of the things I loved about Rogue One is that we finally got to see him, because effects have gotten so good, being terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing of him going down that corridor and literally just tossing people left and right and cutting through them like cheese. You're like going, I've always wanted that. I've always wanted that, because he's a stately villain in a lot of the original trilogy.
Yeah.
I mean, we see him choke people out. We see him levitate and move stuff, but really just laying waste to people. I was like going, damn, that's necessary. We kind of need to see
that. He's only in The New Hope for like 12 minutes, too, on screen.
Yeah. Excellent minutes, I think you meant to say.
Oh, I did.
By the way, I love him in A New Hope. As a kid, the fact that he's going to get in his own TIE fighter and go after
him. Yeah, his special
one. As a kid, I was like, holy fuck, you messed
with the wrong guy. He had his own hoopty, yep.
Yeah, he has his own hoopty. He's like going, I got this.
Stay in attack formation.
Which, again, even though people claim it's like Lucas didn't know he's going to make him his dad, I'm sitting there going, then why is he called Dark Father? That's what his name translates as. And then he is the guy in the TIE fighter. So he's a great pilot as well. I'm sitting there going like, we've already established all that in A New Hope. It's not a big jump, guys.
Luke's just not a farmer, Owen. He has too much of his father in him.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Oh, man.
What's funny too is I love every second of that movie, but it's so funny that when Han swoops in, Darth Vader's initial reaction is what?
What?
What? Oh, it's your little friend. Oh shit!
The force works so well for him there in that moment.
But I remember like when Han was leaving, I remember being heartbroken. It's like, Han, come on, you know, taking his money, leaving. I was like, you can't leave.
Well, take care of yourself, Han. I guess that's what you're best at, isn't it?
And he ultimately did.
You got to stick around long enough to get a medal while your buddy stands there and growls because he didn't get jack shit.
Nor did I know.
Yeah, I think that was something that I don't necessarily think it suffered, but I think that was probably meant to harken back to the fact he'd lost his friend. Biggs had left earlier in the movie originally.
I may never come back, and I just want someone to know.
What are you talking about?
His original big brother figure.
Yeah.
So Han was like his new big brother. He's like, man, everybody's leaving me.
I guess I won't see you.
Maybe someday.
I'll keep a lookout. Yeah.
Well, he did hook back up with Biggs, but Biggs dies.
Biggs dies anyway, yeah. But I think this is before he ran into Biggs. Yeah, he doesn't see Biggs until they're going to the ships. That's why they run in. Hey, Biggs! There's that big reunion that happens.
Yeah.
They put that back in for the special edition.
Yeah. Just not the original scene where they're hanging out on Tatooine.
But there was a lot of firing earlier. Hey! I tell you, Luke, the Rebellion's a long way from here. This planet, big hunk of nothing.
Right.
Tatooine. Yeah,
some of those scenes, I'm glad they cut. I'm glad some of them were really bad of his friends.
Yeah. Oh, that.
Like, he's wearing a Gilligan hat.
Well, like Chad and I have talked about, there are stills of that in the story of Star Wars and in like a couple of tie-in things.
Yeah.
That again, I was sitting there going, did I miss part of the movie? I never saw the Gilligan hat.
I felt the same way. And then even in the novelization, there was some extra information.
Yeah.
That I was like,
That's really the only reason. Where did I put it? Oh, it's right here.
It's right there.
The only reason I knew the name. They didn't even say that in the movie. They don't say Tatooine. It's only in the things like that. You know, it's like, how do I know that? It's because it was in here.
Wait, they don't say Tatooine in A New Hope?
I don't think so.
If only I had a tool, I could look this up.
You know? Oh, well, be really regardless. Cool.
This bickering is pointless.
We didn't even get to the prequels.
I could sum it up for you guys. Two thumbs down. Thank you very much.
What I always say is that I think the story that the prequels tell is good. I don't really have a problem with it. I have a problem with no one editing George Lucas, because they could have been so much better. It's like, hey, first movie, Phantom Menace. I remember walking out feeling so disappointed, yet there were some cool things in it. I'll always say there's cool things in there, but it's not a good movie. He needed someone to say, pick a central character, which he did not do with the first one. That's a big problem. Yeah. Also, humor. Your humor has not worked, you know, in any of these, really. You got lucky with an Anthony Daniels, to tell you the truth, who could deliver some of those C-3PO lines. But your humor is not what – it's not top of the line, friend. So either get rid of Jar Jar entirely or reinvent him, make him a better character. So
I actually was one of the first people to see Phantom Menace in the U.S. because I won tickets in a contest. Yeah, I know. Exactly. And it was a midnight showing.
I was actually on that boo while they were filming. I don't mean to brag. But
when me and George went to the screening together.
Me and Boss, whatever his face name was, Ooga Booga Dooga Dooga, we hung out. And it was great. And I still have some pictures somewhere from, I don't know, I'll look them up.
Two things. One is that is a spot on impression of me, and two, be quiet. I remember seeing it. I was so excited, and it was just electric. The crowd was so excited. And I remember watching it, and it was like, I was having fun. And I got home, and I was like, But then as I was going to sleep, I started having doubts. And by the next day, I was going, that wasn't very good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like, in the crowd, you could feel, like, because I saw it opening night. I remember, like, exactly the same. The energy was so. The place was packed. Everyone was so jazzed. There were people lightsaber fighting up in the front of the screen before it started. And then it starts. Everyone is just – and the boom, and we're all, oh, fuck, yeah. And you could feel it as the movie was going. You could actually feel the energy of the room.
It just slowly dropped.
No one walked out going like, piece of shit that I remember. It's just there were people walking out going like, and trying to convince themselves that it was better. I saw a lot of sad, myself included, people going like, well, that was pretty, that was pretty great. And then it was like over the next week, you're like going, no, I'm sorry.
Wait a minute.
It's not good. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I had to go back to see it like four times before I finally, you know, came to terms with it. It wasn't that great.
Four times was, you going like, woohoo.
Did you think you had missed something, Chad? Or, you know,
I think I was just stunned. But you know, this is another thing. I went to the Ziegfeld at 6 a.m. right before work to go see it.
Uh-huh.
I went straight to the office, so I didn't really have time to sit to really absorb it. So I saw it three more times. One of those times was in Houston.
Well, Mr. Lucas appreciates your money.
He did.
My biggest then and now, my biggest complaint with the prequels is the lack of chemistry between the principal actors, which,
and I love Sam personally. So, you know,
such a distinction from the original trilogy that they
an amazing cast on all of them. But the problem is that, again, not only did he need an editor, it had been a while since he directed actors. Natalie Portman is such a talented actor. She's amazing. And she is stiff as a board in all three of those movies. Gradually
Samuel
getting
Jackson
better.
As well. Yeah.
Samuel Jackson. And it's because either I don't think that it's them being intimidated there in a Star Wars thing. I think literally probably Lucas was like, let's try to keep this kind of, I just don't think they got direction. And I think they end up being incredibly stilted. Everybody, Ewan McGregor's having the time of his life being Obi-Wan Kenobi, but at the same time, even he, there's a sort of like, we're being very strangely classical. And I'm like, what is this about?
And you can see the difference in the great episode of Ahsoka with Hayden Christian, you know, with a different director, just totally different. It was so much better. Yeah.
And Christensen is not maybe as great an actor as some of the people were talking about, but he's better in almost everything else he's been in than he was in the Star Wars films.
Ewan was fortunate when he had a leg up from everybody else because he was playing an already established character. So he'd already been workshopping on Alec Guinness, you know, for months before they started filming. So he had a little bit of character already. Everybody else was like kind of going on, you know, nothing. They were just like, George, what are we doing? You know?
Yeah. And just like, oh, you know, trust your guts. And because, again, I don't think he actually does more than like two ticks. Great. We've got
even in A New Hope.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to have some things flying in behind you. It's going to be cool.
I remember I saw some outtakes of A New Hope when they're filming it. And I can remember Mark Hamill like going, let's do it again, George. And George's like, no, we got it. And he goes, are you sure, George? Why don't we do it again? Like the actors had to ask for more takes.
I don't think necessarily he's an actor's director. He never has been. And even I think you get something like American Graffiti. What's working there is charismatic young actors who basically have free reign. They bring that to life. I think he's literally like, oh, this will look really cool when the car comes around here. And it's going to be really neat.
That's pretty good. That's a good
no, Lucas. I'm just imitating Bobby Moynihan's like Coke Zero. We only have Coke Zero. That was great.
So, well, dare we spend the last 2 minutes?
Dare we?
Summing up the sequels? Or is that a whole nother show?
That's a whole other show. Sequels. Jerry, will you come back and talk sequels, Ahsoka?
Absolutely.
Someday?
Sure. I would love to.
Great. Bad Batch and Clone Wars and all the good stuff.
You got
Mandalorian
it.
And, man, there's so much Star Wars.
That would be good because, this is.
Sure, when we were children and there was a movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was a right? movie. And comic,
five television stations,
and,
you know?
Yeah, and five. Oh. Cha-chunk, cha-chunk, cha-chunk. I remember having pliers to turn the
me too
because the knob had curves. Broken off. Oh, we are old.
Jerry, did you see the that documentary about the holiday special?
I have not seen that one. I need to see it.
I'm just curious. Yeah,
I did rewatch it a few months ago on
it
YouTube,
hurts.
The holiday special, and I loved hating it.
Yeah,
that's what they say. Yeah.
And it's just, I was just flabbergasted. I was just so confused and fascinated.
Yeah.
And I hated it.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen the whole thing. I've only watched bits.
Oh, you really? Missed out, man.
Yeah.
Do you need to borrow my bootleg DVD?
No, I'm good. Yeah.
All right.
I'm good.
The documentary is really great, though.
So. Yeah.
All right, y'all.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
Man, we wrap up so smooth.
And may the force be with you. Yeah.
10 years. Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. I just thought
trademark that.
On it.
I can't wait till those copyrights are, they're all in the public domain. We'll be alive then, right?
Oh, of course.
Luke Skywalker's in the public domain. Great. Here comes my Luke Skywalker gay porno that I've been working on.
Oh, boy. That's the ending we all were waiting for.
Pardon me, parents. It will be Star Wars.